Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network.
And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Log Talk Radio.
Tonight, we'll go back in time and see who's got it. When 22 men reached the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gained, the one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network, in conjunction with Swick Enterprises, and we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. And you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular, Steve Larger. He hails from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Joe Squires, Joe, welcome to the show this evening.
Captain, you are on fire today. Really, really good lead-in with the football. I can't even copy it. I'd break my voice.
And I gotta say this: we are broadcasting live here from the compound. The beginning of a tropical storm. The rain is coming down literally sideways here.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing to see. So hopefully we'll get through the show with no problem, with no drop-offs or whatever. So
it's
I'm going to get started.
Down.
I'm going to get started. By mentioning tonight is going to be a complete open forum for this podcast, and it's an open forum for a variety of reasons. To confirm what I've been talking about to several people lately, we are in the process of moving to Southport, North Carolina. We are planning on getting down there. We are hoping either the end of August or the beginning of September. So this is going to be probably one of the last shows from the compound for the podcast. We're packing up the house and we're building a house down in Southport. We're going to be renting a condo for several months down there while the house is being built. The house is being built as we speak, but it won't be ready until the end of November. So in the interim, there's going to be some changes to the magazine, and I just want to fill in our listeners about it, and this information will be on the website also. If you have any correspondence with Gridiron Greats Magazine, at this stage of the game, I prefer emailing me. with regards to the communication. Two things. The P.O. Box 133 in Wallingford is shut down. We closed out the P.O. Box. And at the same time, any mail from there is going to our home address, which is the address of the compound, which is 180 Long Hill Road in Wallingford. And we'll be changing the phone number shortly when that shuts down. And I'll be giving out the new phone number as we go along. When we are in Southport officially, we will have a new P.O. Box and a different phone number down there for the magazine. The magazine is still on schedule to be printed for the upcoming summer issue, which is traditionally our national issue. And the way it stands right now, I highly doubt if I'm going to be able to get out there even for a day. I was thinking about flying out there for one day and then flying back home the next morning, but I'm leaning against it right now. I just got too much going on here. But the magazine is still and still will be published while we're in this transition period for the summer issue and the fall issue. And then the winter issue will be inside the new compound in Southport, and we'll be back at 100% production. Now, several people have inquired about back issues of Gridiron Greats magazine. I'm going to tell you right now, some of the earliest issues are very, very scarce, as in one and two copies only. So just to give you an idea, if you want to, and I don't know why you're waiting for it, want to buy all the back issues from issues number 23 when we took it over to issue number 72, which was our last issue. We only have two complete sets left. When those two sets are gone, there's going to be several issues of the early issues we do not have any more copies for. So I highly recommend if you are thinking about getting all the back issues, contact me as soon as possible and I'll work out the arrangements with you as far as those back issues are concerned. If you are looking for any back issues, issues number 31 on, we're pretty well set with them. So contact me, 23 to 30, issues number 23 to 30, with the exception of 24, we're really in short supply. So please let me know if you're looking for something in particular, and I'll let you know if I have it or not. And again, if you're not a subscriber to Gridiron Greats magazine, Joe, what do you normally say?
What are you waiting for? Seriously, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not a subscriber, that was a little bit of a head scratcher as well.
I don't know why you're not subscribing. I don't understand it. And I don't understand why you're not buying a complete run of the back issues of Gridiron Greats magazine, because it is a great source of football history and memorabilia for any collector. I think it's very, very important that you study, look, and use it as a reference tool. There's a lot of great information. And by all means, please subscribe to our magazine. So, again, that's a little brief introduction of what's going on over the next few months. As someone who's only lived in three places in my life in an eight-mile radius of each other, this is somewhat of a major move. It's somewhat of an overwhelming move to realize how much actual inventory and my collection I have to pack. And I did definitely get sticker shock when I got the quote from the moving company with regards to the cost of moving the collection from the compound. An interesting story, which I wish I had known about this guy before. We had a dining room set that was basically out of production, an older set. So I advertised it for sale, and I had a person from Illinois saying to me she wanted to buy it. So I said, well, how am I supposed to get it there? She said, no problem. I have a moving company that I use, and they'll pick it up for me, and they'll ship it to me. I said, okay, no problem. So we worked out the arrangements. And the day the guy calls me, he says, I'll be there in a little while. Fine. So I expect to see a big moving truck in front of the house. And it's a guy with a trailer, a one-man operation. I never saw a guy move a dining room set in my life like this guy did. And if I had known about him, and I said to him, if I had known about you, I would have hired you just to move my collection. So he said, well, you know, he says, I've moved a lot of different things. So he said, I never moved a football collection before, but I know I could do it. And then seeing his trailer there and everything else, it was pretty impressive. So I still might use them. I haven't decided yet. But the other moving company, which is basically a father and son deal, assured me they would take good care of it because I said that you know, the collection is the run, yada, yada, yada. So it'll be interesting to see what I end up finally deciding to do, hiring the other guy or using the company I hired for the other stuff in the house. So,
yeah,
it's amazing. And it's
It's interesting. I've never moved a football club. We moved about 4 years ago, and I personally moved my sports card collection over myself. But you know, just because it was too risky, it's too fragile. But I keep a lot of my stuff in a 6 foot tall fire safe that's 4x4. And I remember having it delivered, and I was like, how the hell did they move this? But you have two guys, you know, who strapped. I mean, it was fascinating to watch them move something that weighed, 400 pounds. Interesting. I don't know if you remember this, but about 6 months ago, I built an Excel spreadsheet that broke down every single Gridiron Greats magazine, what volume, issue, season, year, what was on the cover, et cetera. I sent it to you because I was missing a couple of the, volume one stuff. But and then when you took over, which was volume 7 issue 23, and it was funny because some of them have the volume 8 issue XX on it, some of them don't. And I began to notice little inconsistencies, like sometimes they would forget to change what they called it, like autumn or something like that. It was interesting.
Right. And yeah, issues 1 to 22, he went to, he was calling them autumn, winter, and then when I took it over, I basically switched it over to the number system, so.
Yes. And, it was weird because he was calling it winter. It was just fun to track. And then I, made a list of what the, what the cover was. You started doing, in the autumn of 2010 with issue 31, you started doing the Super Collector. Abe Kulinick, I forget, he's a huge Cowboys, collector. He was your first Super Collector, followed by Todd Tobias and Glenn Christensen. It was fun to, look at some of those because a lot of them became guests, and it was just fun. And to go through, and I could remember interviewing a lot of them as well. I mean, Mike Blaisdell in the winter of 2016 as he got ready to sell his collection, Martin Jacobs, et cetera. And I'm proud to say I've written 13 articles for Gridiron Greats over the years. And I've been the Super Collector once, which was the fall of 2019.
That's good.
And at 4 episodes a year. So you started at 23, and it's up to about 72 now. So about 50 that you've done. And I've written 13 articles for you. I never wrote an article for Frank when he owned it.
Yep.
I didn't know about it. The first article I wrote for you, 1984 Topps Football.
I remember that one well.
12 years ago.
I remember that well.
I remember it, too. Pretty fun. So I said it before, but Wallingford, Connecticut, where the captain is, it's like Air Force One is whatever plane the president is on. The president travels on Air Force One, so we recognize that as being Air Force One. But, if the president hitched a ride in your Cessna, that would be Air Force One. But the mecca of football card collecting is the compound. It's where the captain is. So, pretty soon here, Wallingford, Connecticut will no longer be known as the mecca of football collecting. It will be Southport, North Carolina.
Well, I got a couple of people have said to me, you know, first of all, they can't believe that we're actually moving. Because, you know, with me, you could set your clock by certain things I do on certain days in town and so on and so forth. And when I was closing the P.O. box, I was telling, and the post office in Wallingford now has all new people. There's none of the old timers that I knew. I said, you know, I've had this post office box for 34 years. And I said I was probably one of the longest P.O. box holders in Wallingford, with the exception of about three other organizations in town that were around. And I had my original Swick Enterprises business back in 87 when I got the P.O. box. So 34 years, like Brenda says, how do you do it on the way home, not going to the post office to check your mail? I said, it's difficult. Because now I get off at a different exit off the highway to come home. And I don't make my daily trip to the post office anymore. So that's getting tough to use, you know, to be used to. And, you know, packing stuff, it's very mixed emotions. Because, again, when we moved to this house, we were only about a mile and a half away from our other house. And my buddy basically took on my collection and stored it for me at his house. And then the day we moved in, that day after, he came over and we started moving in my collection. And so it seems like in 13 years of being here, we just accumulated so much new stuff, and I accumulated so much inventory. It wasn't even, not even funny right now. It's just staggering, the amount of books, media guides, magazines that I have, let alone all the back issues of Gridiron Greats magazine, which I'm glad with the back issues. Phoenix Press, which prints Gridiron Greats magazine, is going to be taking over the fulfillment of them. When you order back issues, they'll be shipped out in New Haven until I get set up in Southport. And then when I get set up in Southport, I'm either going to come up here and bring them back down with me, or they're going to ship them down to me, one or the other. So there won't be any interruption, with the exception, unfortunately, of the issues that were really in short supply of right now. But it hits me every day that we're a day closer to, you know, we're going to be moving out of here. But again, I'm looking forward to Southport, and like I said to a lot of people, I'm semi-retiring from my job, and I have a simple motto now: I'm done and it's time to have fun. I want to do something different, and I'm working on a couple book ideas, and I want to write again and see what kind of football stuff I'm going to find in North and South Carolina there. That should be interesting at the same time.
You're going to write that long fan-awaited book on Steve Largent? You're going to try and sweep the knee on Chris Willis, get to it first?
I'll try to beat him out on it. I hate to compete with Chris, but... Yeah. In this case, it's quite possible. Another thing that people have been asking me about at the same time, will I miss all the shows up here? And I say yes and no, for the simple reason, the show circuit, because of the pandemic, really unfortunately just shut down up here. And East Coast has traditionally always had a lot of small shows. And that's one thing I may miss, because I talked to a few people in the Wilmington, North Carolina area, and said there's really not much going on as far as shops or anything like that. They're few and far between, so I guess it's going to be more like a flea market hit or miss type of thing. And then I could always get into Chantilly in Virginia. It's a six-hour drive for me, or basically an hour plane ride. So October I'll be at the Chantilly show with hopefully some other VFCers there. And it'll be interesting, because I have never been to that show. So it's going to be interesting for me to see the show. And hopefully down the road I can set up there or something. And I'm also seriously thinking about opening up a little shop in Southport of football only.
Oh.
What I've always wanted to do, A to Z football. Everything from books, magazines, cards, equipment, jerseys, you know, polo shirts, stuff like that, and see if that would fly down there. I thought about doing it here in Wallingford numerous times, and I never pulled the trigger. And at the height of the explosion of cards, I came very close to setting up something in 1990, but then I decided against it. My daughter was real young. She was only 2 years old, and it was too much going on, so that never panned out. That was the time frame. I worked part-time for a card shop in Meriden, Connecticut, which is a town next to us, and I helped that guy out for a couple of years until he shut down. But anyways, I'm thinking about that too at the same time. I figure I got enough inventory. I could just put my inventory out and order a few other things here and there and see what happens. Who knows?
Nice.
You know?
Nice. I love it.
It'd be interesting.
Well, how many back issues do you have? I mean, you know, like I said, going back to volume 7, issue 23 is when you start.
Some issues, we probably have 20 to 30, if not a few more, and a lot of issues were a dozen or less down. So long story short, we are really getting down to the nitty gritty. And I try to always publish at least 50 to 100 extra issues after our subscribers and show people that sell the magazine. And some issues, I sell quite a few, and other issues, not as many, but over the years they've sold. So I'm still looking at probably a good 1,500 Gridiron Greats copies that are sitting right now downstairs and back issues. So, again, anybody looking for anything, with the exception of 20, the 20 issues, with the exception of 24, we're in pretty good shape if you're looking for anything. But
wow.
at the same time, I'm finding out more and more, as Frank found out with his first and second issues being so rare, there are not that many issues in circulation anywhere. And again, as a lot of old-time readers unfortunately pass away or stop reading or whatever the case might be, I try to collect those sets of magazines from them, from the family, so I can resell them into the market for the people who are looking for it. Because as we know in the magazine, there were a lot of people looking for issues 1 and 2 for many years now. And there's just not a lot of them out there. I mean, they're a tough find, to say the least. So anyways,
yeah,
that's the update. And again, I'll keep everybody posted. We're going to be changing some stuff on the website. And long story short, we'll still be operational. We'll still be going. There's probably going to be a good week or so when I'm actually moving down there that I won't be pretty much online or doing much of anything other than getting set up at the same time. So anyways, moving to other subjects, and I want to lead off with the National. And again, I probably am not going to be at the National this year, and Joe, I know you're going to be there, so give me some thoughts as far as what's going on and so on and so forth.
Oh, just excited. It's my first National in, 3 years. I missed Atlantic City because I don't really like Atlantic City two years ago I missed because of a friend's wedding in August, and then last year because of, COVID, obviously. So, I mean, it's been a couple of years, and I'm, I dig chat boards, and I dig talking to my friends, but, nothing beats in person. Sitting there having pizza, with your friends and talking ball, and I dig it,
This is going to probably be the first National. I was trying to figure it out. In about 15 or 16 years, I'm missing, besides obviously last year when it was canceled. So I'm very bittersweet about it one way or the other. I am attempting to, and probably will have some of the National issue, however, at the National for people to have them available, picking it up. So I'm working on that right now for the logistics of it. It obviously will not be what I normally bring. Which is I normally bring about 150 issues there and hand them out to people who've never seen it before, so on and so forth. And again, like you, I do miss the camaraderie and the talking, seeing a lot of people that I unfortunately see once a year. type of situation. Yeah. And again, Chicago's one of my favorite areas because it's pretty easy to fly in there, and you take the van right to the hotels. And I do enjoy the casino there at the Indian River Casino with the restaurants there. And, you know, I'll miss it, but it is what it is.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah. It's going to be, I'm bringing my son Xander. He's excited. The other day, you know, I told him we were doing it. And then a couple days later, you know, I reminded him, like, yeah, you and I are going to Chicago. We're leaving on Thursday morning. We get there Thursday. We're having football, or we're having a pizza with the Leatherheads, you know, all the football guys, you know, Thursday night at the pizza place. And then there's a baseball game going on Thursday night. So we're going to leave pizza. And we're going to walk down and grab a baseball game. And then we're going to get up the next morning, walk the floor. And there's another group of guys that's having dinner on Friday. And then we're going to walk the floor a little bit on Saturday. And, you know, then we're going to call the ball on Saturday, but we'll probably end up just, you know, grabbing some friends. And he just goes, yes, yes, I love that. And I was, it surprised me for a second because I was like, what the hell? And he's like, I want to get a Rob Gronkowski card. What's his rookie card? Because he loves Gronk. He wants to be a tight end. And I'm like, well, let's go look. I mean, I actually don't know what Gronk's rookie card is. You know, that's kind of the shiny world. And you know, so we spend about 10 minutes on eBay trying to figure it out. I'm like, well, let make a list and, you know, take a picture. You know, it's his little cell phone we just got him that, you know, only has a couple numbers available. You know, let's take a picture. Let's figure out what Gronk card you want. And then we'll walk the floor looking for it. And you know, it's kind of funny. It's like how are collectors born? This is it to me, and it's a hanging around with men like us. I mean, do you remember when we were in Cleveland, you know, 3 years ago, and all of us had dinner at that, old air show place?
Yeah.
And sitting around opening up racks. I mean, I love it. There's pictures of him with, you know, Spano, Blaisdell, you know, Jeff, you know, it's just all these guys, the men, the Leatherheads, I call them. And every one of those guys treats him so well. And, you know, it's fun. And, you know, how does he not, you know, begin to admire all those guys and want to be around them? It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, but
exactly.
Hopefully the pass there.
I got to say this, with Cleveland, that Cleveland exhibition hall shutting down, I guess they're going to be going to Atlantic City more so. And I did like Cleveland, the exhibition center, a lot better than I liked the one at Atlantic City. Atlantic City is very crowded, and it was just logistically, it's much more difficult to get around. Cleveland was, you know, out in the open type of thing, you know, with the I don't know what it was, a highway or whatever, right off the highway, you get off and get right there type of situation. I remember that convention, I stayed downtown Cleveland. I was right near the stadium, and Eric Stang stayed at the same hotel that I was at. So it was nice because we got to go in every day together, and we came back every day from the convention. And then we were able to hang out at the couple bars there. In the hotel and right close by after the show and talk. So that was interesting, to say the least. And downtown Cleveland was very interesting. I enjoyed walking around Brown Stadium, new stadium, even though nothing was open. And it was a very, very interesting trip, to say the least. Atlantic City is not at all like Cleveland. And Atlantic City is the type of thing, you go back to your hotel and that's about it. You know.
Yeah.
So
I have a good friend who lives in Cleveland. So before we went to a baseball game, we went to his house for the day, and we're swimming in his pool of his apartment, and grabbed a barbecue, and he drove us down to gave us the tour. We grabbed grabbed lunch. We spent probably 5-6 hours that day. Touring Cleveland from a local. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, Cleveland was a very nice setup. I had a nice time. I actually came in before the show started. I spent a day by myself in Cleveland, so I walked around the stadium, went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame there, and I had a nice dinner at a restaurant downtown, that evening and then just walked back to the hotel. So it was pretty neat. Atlantic City, on the other hand, is Atlantic City. I mean, I've been going to Atlantic City since I was a kid, since it was very close to Connecticut here. And it's not at all like it was back in the 60s, obviously. And, I don't know. It's more of a – Atlantic City for the National is more the people who will make a day trip from the tri-state area and from Pennsylvania to see what's going on there. There's not as many people like in a Chicago setting where they're there for the week, you know, there for Wednesday through Sunday and, you know, are at the show every day type of thing, visiting, so on and so forth. Much different crowd, to say the least. Now, what's on your want list for the National, Joe, if anything?
A little bit like you, I hope to come across some old Pottsville Maroons postcards, you know, sitting in the, you know, dollar bin.
Good.
Keith Javik is set up. He's always good for some stuff. I started setting, you know, my, you know, this is to be taken to the National, you know, stuff aside. I think I'd mentioned some of the, you know, Hunt auction, you know, Pottsville postcards I sent to SGC to grade. And because they were autographed, SGC refused to grade them because they don't grade autographs. And their fear was if they graded the card that people would think that was associated with the autograph. And I actually had an email dialogue with the head grader. I'm like, well, just put, you know, right in the flip that, you know, autograph not graded. He's like, nah, we don't want to confuse it. So I'm taking those, you know, hoping I can talk to somebody at customer service at SGC and talk to them and they're grading them, or, you know, I'll pay for the, you know, the quick turnaround time, you know, to get them slabbed by PSA if they decide. I have some ticket subs that want to get graded. I have a couple wax boxes I want to get sealed, stuff like that. So I tend to take the stuff that I want to, you know, I have a couple consignments I want to, you know, hand off to, you know, Al at Love of the Game. You know, I dig his auction, you know, when I was reporting him. So I have call it about 30 items that I'm bringing, you know, it's kind of fun.
Sure. Sounds good. It's a great time.
Yeah,
it's a great time.
You're going to be missed. Anchoring down the corner of the Josh Adams, there's a lot of stalwarts that are missing. I mean, you know, you get, you know, Andy and John, you know, MSD no longer setting up, and you know, Josh, it's just, times are changing, I guess.
We had the pleasure of setting up the last time I was in Chicago, which I guess was the last National I did. We set up next to, I can't think of the guy's name, that Twitter sensation who had Dennis Rodman at his table. And when Dennis Rodman came to the table, I can't think of the guy's name now. My mind's blank on it. He's the one cornering the market on certain sports cards. Rodman comes. Rodman looks like he's half dead. I felt sorry for the guy because he could barely walk. And all our sales stopped for a good hour because couldn't get near our table because he had the overflow there with Rodman, and they interviewed Rodman. And I'm not being a townie or anything like that, running up to him, "Can I have your autograph, please?" Blah blah blah. You know, I had a good laugh at the whole scene. I thought it was pretty interesting, to say the least. But, I'll miss Chicago. Chicago, I picked up over the years some interesting things. As you said, in dollar boxes. I mean, stuff people have no clue what they were putting in there. And pretty nice oddball football stuff. And a few nice Hall of Fame tickets from the Hall of Fame game. Perfect condition. I remember that. That was one of my best buys there. Very interesting. But there's stuff to be found. You just got to search.
Yep.
And
it's getting harder and harder. I mean, how much more unfound, unknown stuff is there that's going to walk into a National, you know, and be that fine? I mean, you know, the East Coast is known for that. I mean, you know.
That's why I really feel paper shows, or paper mania shows, as they're called here in New England, postcard shows, Those to me are the last frontiers for unfound areas. That's always been my opinion. I really believe you go to a postcard show, and if you know what you're looking for, you may actually, you know, you may find exhibits for, you know, single print exhibit cards for $1. You may find matchbooks for $1, diamond matchbooks, you know, from the 30s, so on and so forth. This stuff is there. And not all paper dealers, especially if they don't deal in sports, really don't want anything to do with it. So they just want to get rid of it, turn it over, and that's it. You know what I mean? So as much as everybody thinks there can't be any finds out there, there are still a lot of finds, in my opinion. The one thing I'm fascinated now, though, with, and we had a tag sale at the house for household stuff, where people, young people with their phones, they take a picture of the item, and then they look up what the value of it is. And me being as sarcastic as I am, I can't resist saying, is that worth like $1 million or something? And, you know, I'm looking at like a $2 item of whatever it is. And they're basically resellers. They resell on Amazon and they resell on eBay. One guy explained his whole story to me. And I said to him, so you go to every tag sale in the area? He said, yeah, that's all I do. And then I resell it Monday through Thursday. Once Friday hits, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I'm out trying to buy stuff. It's an amazing amazing concept.
I
just find
wow.
It, I don't know how they can make a living from it, but the guy makes $500 a week.
How hard is that? That's a grind, man. Oh, well.
Well, for you and I, it's a grind. I mean, if you know, I remember the days I used to go to literally a half a dozen tag sales on the weekend during the spring and the fall, in spring and the summer, and the fall to a certain degree, to see if I could find any football stuff. And you know, and it was always hit or miss. And then after like you know, 6-7 weeks of going every weekend, I would take a break, and then I would say to myself, "Geez, I probably should have gone today because maybe what I'm looking for." Is, you know, I could find something. But then after a while, it became useless. You know what I mean? So,
like playing
poker. You know.
It's like playing poker now. That's what? Crappy hand and ring. You know what? I'm just going to see one more flop.
Yeah.
Being diligent about not staying in the hand and seeing, you know, yeah, not seeing flops. Yeah, now I hear you.
Exactly. So, anyways, that's the scoop on the national. Another thing that I want to talk about is there was a big buyout since we last had our last podcast in the auction world, and I had to deal with Golden Auctions being bought out by Collectors Holdings. And Joe, give us some background on both Golden and Collectors Holdings.
Golden Auction is, you know, one of those auction houses that started in what, 2012, you know, Ken Golden, who's, kind of a huckster, you know, he's kind of got a slimy reputation in the industry. So, I mean, but, you know, he immediately out of the gate sold like a, you know, Honus Wagner PSA 5 miscut, you know, beautiful card. So suddenly he was bringing in really big high ticket consignments. And some of those were his own collection. Some of those were, you know, friends, you know, that it's, but no matter what, you have to hand it to the guy, you know, he had $40 million auctions, you know, which is pretty big. It, you know, it's comparable to, you know, being up there with REA, you know, any of them. So whatever it is, Golden Auctions had a flag planted and they were pretty good. They've, you know, the last couple auctions have really been basketball centric, you know, a lot of, you know, Giannis rookie cards, et cetera, just, you know, shiny modern stuff, but whatever it is, it's
right.
You know, $500,000 cards. Let's take many of those before you have a big auction. It was announced earlier this week that Golden Auctions was being bought by Collectors Holdings. Collectors Holdings is a corporation that's owned by New York Mets owner, Steve Cohen, a hedge fund billionaire, and a name that might be familiar to everyone, Nat Turner. Recently bought PSA or, you know, Collectors Universe and took them private. So PSA is now a private, you know, company, the largest grading company, the number one grading company, you know, in the world is now privately held by, you know, a gentleman named Nat Turner, who now is part of a company that bought a very large auction house. And you know, the
all right,
Matt Turner.
First question. Hold your thought for a second. Do you feel like I feel that there could possibly be a massive conflict of interest here?
Well, yes, obviously at first blush. But from everything I've read about Nat, from all the interviews I've seen with him, he's a consummate business person. First of all, I get the feeling he's too damn busy to influence certain grades. So for example, I own half of an HVAC company. I own an electrical company here in Portland, and I own half of an HVAC company I bought 2 years ago. Does my electric company, do I get preferential treatment, electrically, do we share Rolodexes? Of course we do. For years, high-end auction houses have gotten preferential treatment, or dealers have gotten preferential treatment to PSA. If you're submitting 10,000 cards a month to PSA, you're a bigger deal than I am, who submits, 20 cards a year. And you should get preferential treatment. Yeah. You should get access to deals, or, hey, I'd like to talk to the dealer about, these grades coming up. I'd like to, Golden came out, with a statement and said, we're operating the same as we did yesterday. He told Sports Collectors Daily, there's a firewall between Collectors Universe and Golden auctions. I will not get better service or preferential grading from Collectors Universe. I'll still do business with PSA's competitors. I'll continue to use SGC and Beckett. And you read that and you're like, well, half the whole truth is not the truth. Obviously, there are some shiny cards that sell better in Beckett because kids, younger kids like Beckett. Older guys like PSA or SGC. But to say I will not get better service or preferential grading is silly. I mean, of course you will. Of course you've got, you've got the inside track on it. But will there be a firewall? Too much at risk. If a slider high-end card appears in a PSA holder and is sold by Golden, to me, there's just too much at risk. PSA's reputation, as being, authentic, not suede, and, Golden's. I think it's going to be under a microscope. If a high-grade SGC card appears, will it be under the same microscope? Probably not. I tend to be a little more, there's too much at risk. There's millions of dollars. So if one card looks like it's overgraded by PSA, and is going through a Golden auction, that's not a consignment, then there's too much at risk.
Exactly.
Golden's at risk to lose consignments. PSA is at risk to lose their reputation as being, the number one collector. And then Bob Swick, who doesn't collect graded cards, sitting off to the side saying, flipping your thumb on all of us.
The example you gave within your own company, to me is more of a complementary company between the two. Because again, I know a couple of companies here locally. The guys they're an electric company and they're HVAC heating company. You know what I mean? They do both, and it's not as uncommon or common either way. But again, I don't think I think it's more of a convenience thing. Saying, hey, we can handle all the electrical because we're an electrical company too. But in this case, I go to Golden with my collection, and I said, well, we got to get all your keys graded from the 50s and 60s because you're losing too much money on the table. So we're going to hold up the auction. We'll get your cards back within a couple of months. So then we're going to feature your auction with your collection, yada, yada, yada. But because we're giving you better service, we're going to take a higher commission rate on your consignments here. So, okay, if somebody doesn't know what's the average consignment rate, A, B, why are they getting better service, C, and are they really going to get more money because they're Golden auctions? Or are a lot of people going to be turned off by saying, well, I really don't want to bid in Golden auctions because they're, they're connected to PSA, so I'm not comfortable with that. You know what I mean? So I don't know which way it'll go. Obviously, I've been wrong on this numerous times, but I don't like it. I hate to say it. I just don't like it. I don't think it's good for the hobby. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we've also had we have some friends of the show, you know, who are now associated with PSA. Todd Tobias,
works
at PSA. Man of high integrity, and Scott Alpaugh, who's a stalwart of the industry, he's been doing this longer than I have. I mean, way longer than I have. Worked for an AI grading, kind of pseudo grading company that got bought up by PSA. We talked about that a couple shows ago. I mean, both of these guys are the kind of people who, if they saw something nefarious, if they saw like a, hey, here's 10 cards from Golden, wink, wink. That they wouldn't stand for that. So maybe I'm a little too, relaxed in this, knowing that there are good people in the hobby who work, for one of the largest grading companies in the world, PSA, who wouldn't put up with that kind of crap. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm naive. Who knows?
Yeah, I know. And maybe I'm too overly pessimistic, because I just seen. And again, I know I'm a dinosaur, but I've seen so many changes in the hobby over the years. I just love to see somebody like your son walk around a show and asking dealers, do you have any of this card or whatever that card type of thing. And if a kid like that came to my table, you know what I would do? If I had the card, it's his. And I don't want anything for it. Just take it, enjoy it. Take your extra money that you were going to spend on the card and go someplace else and buy a few more cards for your collection. You know what I mean? And that's how we can nurture the hobby, so we have a future for the hobby. But I don't see what the future is other than buying stock in plastic companies. I mean, that's still the way I view it. You know what I mean? I can't get excited about if God forbid, my collection was graded, I would have had to hire just a moving company just to move that amount of plastic. And I know
that
my new
stuff
house
weighs a lot. Yeah.
My new house wouldn't accept the weight of all this graded stuff, these slabs, the way I'm going to be setting up the house. So, but that's neither here nor there. That's just my opinion, and I'll leave it like that,
Yep, no,
I'll leave
it
like that.
That stuff weighs a lot. I moved, most of my collection, and you are absolutely right. You start putting, getting, 100 of those in those, those black boxes PSA puts out, and next thing you've got a couple hundred pounds. It adds up really quick. You're spot on. It's kind of funny.
I mean, I got 1,000. I got well over 2,000 media guides, books, magazines, Sports Illustrated, Inside Sports. I got so many publications, it's not even funny. Well, I've been paring them down here and there to try to get them to a more manageable amount. But at the same time, the weight of it is incredible. But the point I'm making is, I actually feel my non-graded publication collection has more value in the long run, because people still want publications. So people are still looking for that Sports Illustrated with the Dolphins covers or whatever, Steelers covers, so on and so forth. So it'll be interesting. To me, it's going to be interesting what you actually see and what everybody sees at the National, what they comment on. And again, in a way, I'm sure the box break people are going to be there in full force everywhere. I'd just like to see somebody just go to a table and buy a pack of cards and just open them and see who they had, you know what I mean? And not be junk wax either, but be like a 2021 whatever, Panini whatever, card set type of thing. All right, we got about 10 minutes left.
And that is some other stuff I'm bringing. I'm bringing about, 7 or 8 wax packs, to rip open at the Leatherheads dinner, so that we can, that always seems to be fun. A couple 79s and 81, a couple 83s and an 84. So,
cool. That's fun.
Love it.
That's fun. All right, last 10 minutes or so, I want to touch upon the continuing saga of PWCC, Operation Bullpen. An issue that I don't think is going to be going away anytime soon.
Yeah.
And looking at, you know, again, for those not familiar with the 2019 Operation Bullpen was opened by the FBI to basically look into the allegations that PWCC and in particular Gary Mosier, a noted card doctor, were buying cards, doctoring them, resubmitting them, getting them graded, and then selling them. So do we have different players in the same grading game? What's going on with this? What's your input on that, Joe?
And it's much to do about. It's the same stuff as we were talking about. It's just, gosh, you know, you remember WeWag, you know, when it was a game, people buying, you know, like a, you know, a really nice PSA 7, cracking out a PSA 8 card, resubmitting it to get into an 8, sliding a 7 in there, resealing it. I mean, you know, and again, going back to here's the captain who doesn't collect graded cards, laughing at all of us, you know, who are going through yet another, sealed graded card problem. So it's but as you mentioned in 2019, you know, PWCC, you know, owned by Breton, Betsy, you know, Huggins. Actually, they live here in Portland. They live about, about two blocks south of my house. I walk my dog by their house about twice a week, oddly enough. I didn't even realize it was until another friend of mine who lives is their next door neighbor is like, hey, you collect cards. What's up with this? Because Betsy mentioned she was really nervous about an FBI investigation. Like, oh, those people are going to jail. if they borrowed your lawnmower, I'd get it back. But the wheels of justice move slowly. And, here it is. It's, so for 2 years, the FBI is, investigating Operation Bullpen, and it's, longtime card doctor Gary Mosier. You know, he'll buy a card or PWCC will buy a card, take the fat 48 Leafs. They'll buy it, they'll crack it out, they'll doctor it, they'll resubmit it. And you want to know a company that gets really quick turnaround times at PSA? It's PWCC. You know, I can't even get how many cards they submit. Back when I knew Jonathan Miller, he was Orange County Sports. He told me he submitted between 50 and 70,000 cards a month to PSA, and he had it down to a $2 grading fee. This is 10 years ago, obviously, but he had it down to a $2 grading fee. And, he had a PSA 10 only thing. So if PSA looked at a card and said, yep, that's a PSA 10, they'd slab it. It'd be $5. If they looked at it and said, nope, it's not a PSA 10, then they charge him $2 for the review. And I was always like, well, that's kind of, so there's a financial benefit for PSA to put that in a 10, but, still, it's, here's PWCC, and there's a lot of people on a lot of message boards that are finding this, that are, tracking cards. Say they're, like the Brady rookie card that's numerically, that's numbered, sequentially. You see somebody, buy a, card number 19, and then 6 months later, buy card number 19 in a PSA 6, and then 6 months later, card number 19 shows up in a PSA 9, slab.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that, or, cards with very specific stains or marks on them, or discoloring, cards that can be identified.
I use the example all the time is where the heck did all these perfect 48 and 49 Leaf football cards come from? I honestly can say in all the years I was collecting before cards got graded, I never saw a 48 or 49 Leaf card better condition than X at best. Excellent condition. The bulk of the 48 and 49 Leaf cards that I collected over the years were basically G, VG, possibly VGEX, very good, excellent, that split, 1 or 2X, but honestly, most of them were graded fair to good because they were beaters. I mean, I never saw cards in good condition. How did all of a sudden, fast forward 25 years later when cards are graded, all of a sudden all these pristine, beautiful cards come to the market? It's impossible.
Without being doctored or touched up. People are kidding themselves if that's what they're thinking. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So really, Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense to say the least. But
and here they are. So I mean, it's just so there's proof. Cards with identifying marks, cards that are numerically sequenced that are being bought in low grade and then reappearing in higher grade. And there's this board. I forget the name of it. It's there's various boards that there's people with too much time on their hands to track this stuff, and they're doing the Lord's work here because they're catching people, and so there's a lot of evidence, and PWCC has the ability now to indemnify themselves, saying, well, that's a consignment, I can't help it, but there's a lot of and then you have eBay, who's almost becoming complicit in this, who are as time goes on, it's less and less information available of buyers or sellers, So it used to be you knew who bought a card, and then it used to be where you saw, you could, see what the feedback of somebody who bought a card was. And now you can't, you don't have that information. And they're doing that to protect, maybe not purposefully protect people like that, but just to hide it. So there's less information. This hobby of ours, which is supposed to be fun, is becoming more and more complicated, I guess, with stuff like that.
Yeah. It's amazing.
But here it is. It was just reported that, things might be getting a little tight because, from a couple of reliable sources, it was just mentioned, if you have some of your cards or your collectibles in the PWCC vault, which they do to help people avoid, sales taxes in various states, you better get it out, because if the FBI shows up and sees his asset, good luck proving that was yours.
Exactly.
So,
well, we got a couple more. We're down to a couple of minutes, and again, check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. And seriously, if you're looking for the complete run of back issues, please contact me, and I will give you the information on it. They only got two complete sets left. Joe, any final ideas in our two-minute warning wrap-up? What else can you hit upon in 60 seconds or less?
We got a couple more shows here, a couple more shows before the National, and I'll definitely be sending you pictures from the National of all of us eating pizza and having fun. So you'll be sorely missed, Captain.
I'm trying to figure out a way, like I said, if I could just fly in that Thursday and then fly home Friday. I don't know if I could pull it off or not. So I could just sleep on the plane coming home type of thing. But we'll see what happens. I'm not counting on it, though.
Will you be in North Carolina then? Will you be in North Carolina?
I'm actually wrapping up my 9-to-5 job that week. It's just going to be, I got a lot of different things going on with that job to shut down. And I got a new person coming in to train. So, because I've been at my current job over 20 years, and it didn't go over well. It didn't go over well with the board that I'm leaving, and I told them I didn't realize I signed a lifetime contract with you guys that I was going to work here until the day I died. So I'm happy. I only got a few more weeks, and I have a lot of severance time coming at the same time. But anyways, it is what it is. I'll see what happens. I pulled off some miracles over the years, so you never know. And I still have a big United Airline credit I got to use somehow. So I got to figure that out at the same time. All right, we're almost out of time. I got a couple of guests lined up, hopefully for the next week or two, and we'll be back on in July with hopefully a couple more shows with some interesting guests. We got a great summer issue coming up of Gridiron Greats Magazine, issue 73. I'm sure everyone's going to enjoy it. Joe, final thoughts, 20 seconds.
Good to be back on the air with you, Captain. Look forward to it.
And I think very, very I'm losing time here. I really believe you're going to have a great time with your son at the National. And you got to enjoy every second there with him.
It should be great. That's it. Hopefully we'll be back next week with another show. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.